Running a call center is tough. Leading a sales team is a challenge. Luckily, your hosts know what it takes to succeed. What you can expect from your two guides? Conversations that won't be overly scripted. Definitely not salesy or boring. Just filled with as much value as possible. Each week, Jason and Oliver will bring you topics to help scale your team, increase profits, and actually feel like you are winning. So, if you are ready to up your game and become the best in the business, tune in, take notes, and be prepared to learn. And here they are with another episode of Call Center Confidence. It's Jason Cutter and Oliver Catt.
Mr. Catt, how are you?
Oh, very well, Mr. Cutter. Very well indeed. Thank you very much. Happy Wednesday to you and everybody else listening and tuning in for Call Center Confidence episode 16. How are you?
I am great. I am excited as we move through this progression. Lots of good stuff. Side note, by the way, Mr. Ryan Butler, I forgot to tell you in advance. I actually talked to him yesterday. He's the one that connected us. Ryan, if you're tuning in, if you made it to the stream, welcome. And thank you again for connecting us. He's such a great connector. And so it was good to chat with him. But I am good. I'm excited for this topic. Like all of them. And I think maybe we should jump in. I mean, for anybody who's watching this live, please say hello in the comments, submit your questions, you know, put anything in there that you want that you want to say to us. We're keeping in mind it is on the internet forever. So keep that in mind. You know, say hello, tell us where you're tuning in from. Also, just like we talk about all the time, make sure to go to callcenterconfidence.com so you can tune in. You can see the live stream there. So depending on where you're watching this, either LinkedIn, YouTube, or Facebook, you can also watch it on callcenterconfidence.com live. All the replays are there thanks to the master at work, Mr. Oliver Catt, in setting that up. So go there. And then obviously the other thing is if you want reminders about our weekly show, get it on your calendar and get a bunch of emails from us that will fill up your inbox with lots of good reminders and great stuff. Then go to luma.ma/callcenterconfidence to get signed up and to get it on the calendar. So yeah,
absolutely.
That's some housekeeping stuff.
So much to see. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're going out. We're going everywhere. We're going to be like taking over and dominating the world before you know it. And also, the thing that I'm going to tell everybody right now, for some reason, I sound like I've got a bit husky this morning. I have no idea why. So bear with me, listen in, and I'm sure I'll get through this. So what's the big topic for today, Jason? I know we posted about it. Where are we going?
So for today's topic, and I know this is one that you have a ton of experience with, so I'm going to let you run with this as much as you want. Is the topic is success with QA, success with quality assurance, success with quality control, success with reviewing compliance, depending on what an organization calls it, but success with the process of listening to calls, providing feedback, subjective, objective feedback, using that for improving quality, disciplinary stuff, things like that. You know, in the wide range of everywhere that can go, I've seen it done terribly, where it's like literally the police. People are afraid of the police at all times. And I've seen it done really well. And so that's where we want to start. So I would love to know from you, when you hear this topic, when you hear success with QA, where do you start with that? Where does that take you in your mind?
Do you know what? I mean, you could break that down many, many, many ways. I think the first and foremost with taking everything down with QA, from my opinion, is making sure that you've kind of got all of your ducks in a row straight away off the bat. And you actually have an SOP, you have a set of guidelines, you have exactly what you're trying to achieve, and then you work backwards. I've worked in call centers that have kind of gone, right, okay, so let's start with the calls. Let's go that way and build our structure, build our plan. And before you know it, you're changing that plan 5, 6, 7 times before you settle on something that's kind of you can take away with. In my opinion, I think you need to have those guidelines. You need to have a structure from the beginning. And that's the only way you're going to achieve success off the bat. Now, don't get me wrong. You're always going to revise. You're always going to go back. You're going to change things. You're going to change the outlay. You're going to change the outset of what it could look like. But I think the first and foremost is you sit down You get everybody's buy-in from around the business. You understand exactly what is needed on your QA form. Now, obviously, there are so many things you need to include in that form. You've got to include your checklists. You've got to include compliance. You've got to include conversational, your CX side of things. Do you want to include mandatory statements? There, the list goes on and on and on and on and on. But what I will say is don't make it too big of a challenge. Make it achievable. And don't have it regulate your business, because the minute you have it regulating everything, the minute you find your agents are finding loopholes, they are finding ways around doing things, and you open yourself to a whole heap of mess. So you need to put yourself in that agent mind frame right from the beginning and say, what are they going to do to get around it? What would you add to that, Jason?
Well, so before I add anything, because you said something and I want to know specifically what you mean or have you dive into that. You said don't have it regulate your business. What do you mean by that specifically or generally?
Well, I think I think one of the things that I've noticed over the years is some companies use their QA as gospel, as the guideline, as you have to follow this in order to achieve this. QA can be there to do that. But in my opinion, your sales, your management, and your team have to get you there from A to B. Now, the reason why I say don't let it regulate your business is because if you just hold yourself to your QA scores, that's the only thing you're going to work towards. That's the only way you're going to deliver. You're not going to deliver everything else. And I've seen it in companies where, and don't get me wrong, you have to make sure you're compliant. That's the whole point of one of these areas. I mean, and also to make sure your team are doing the right thing at the right time. But you can't just stick to using QA, in my opinion, as the be-all and end-all of what you're trying to achieve. Because before you know it, you're going to have quality and compliance running your business rather than what you want as your own business, if you know what I mean by that.
Got it. Yeah. So that makes much more sense, like that detail. And I've seen that where companies will go too far to the extreme. My guess is that's what you've seen as well. And so they put everything around QA. They put everything like that QA score or what QA says, who's doing well, who's not doing well. That one metric, that one KPI from one department ends up driving all the business. And it makes it too restrictive. And then, like you said, is that when you do that, when you put especially one parameter in place or put it all the focus on one, let's say outcome or result, then what happens is you have salespeople who are going to find the loopholes. They're going to try to figure out ways to get around it. They're going to argue and fight. Again, this is where I've seen it with the right intention done incorrectly, where it feels like the police. Right. Agreed. And so somebody is afraid all the time, or when they get caught doing something or accused of something, then they feel like they're arguing and fighting and they need to go to court and justify why it's not them. And it just becomes this, you know, this battle. How much of that, like, because I want to stick on this topic, I think this is important, is how much of that is based on who owns QA? Right. And I guess the bigger question is, who should own QA? Is that a sales function? Is that an operations function? Does it need to be HR? Like when you've seen it done right, who owns QA?
Okay. So I've seen QA owned by so many different channels and so many different functions within the business or within a corporation. I think QA, I'm just going to go out and say it, is QA needs to sit with the operation. So whether you have an operations director, a CSO, a head of operations, director of operations, or a head of a channel, because I've worked with call centers that have a sales channel, a service channel, an e-chat channel, you know, technical support, so many different variations of this. But of course, they have to have a team that kind of branch out to each area. But I think they need to sit within the operation. I've seen it happen where QA have sat with individual departments. Great. Do you know what? Because then you've got your own QA that have a dotted line into a head of that reports into somewhere else. But then when that tends to happen, that head of usually then reports into, as you quite rightly mentioned, a HR function or a non-operational function within the business. when that happens, I think you start to withdraw the team a little bit. So if you report into a head of site or a director of site that has a lot of different channels underneath them or a lot of different sites underneath them, you may get lost up and caught in the wider business. Whereas if you had a QA department that, as you say, reported into a sales channel, a service channel, or a mixture of the two, they then keep their ear to the ground a little bit more in that instance. And they start to kind of get a feel for the business and understand how the business works. At the same time, I believe that every member of the QA function should also be listening to calls and keeping their ears to the ground and keeping their toes in the water to understand what trends are happening. Because you start to see trends when you kind of have a closer feel to the operation, if that makes sense. And, you know, when we are in that environment and when you are starting to see that, and it kind of goes back to your first part of the question about, you know, where does it sit? Does it look right? Does it not work within an operation? Is if you are within the operations, when you see these trends, you can fix these trends pretty quickly. Whereas if you're removed and you sit under that HR functionality, you don't always see it or don't always have the authority to go to somebody who can change it pretty quickly.
All right. So, and I'm putting you on the spot a bunch today, which is fun. I feel like I'm in podcast host mode.
Turn my lights in.
Which I love. I think this is super fun. Cause I have experience with several companies with this, some, you know, that have formed one, some that need it, some that have done it good, some that have done it bad, in, you know, the whole spectrum. And I know that you have a lot of experience in the centers you work with, and that's much more common to have a QA department, especially in a call center where it's service, support, and sales. And so, so here's the thing is, how do you, for the people who are watching this or listening, who have thought about this or have started it and faced the challenge, how do you set it up in such a way or run it and make it successful for the business? Again, the goal is for the business, like you said, not overly regulated. When the challenges come up that I've seen where operations or HR is running QA and there's, how do I put this? Generally a rift between sales and operations such that operations is constantly cleaning up the mess that sales makes with the people they enroll and the promises that they make. Let's just call it like it is. That's what salespeople do if they're not, you know, regulated. And so calling it like it is all the way, usually ops doesn't like sales because of how sales operates and what they say. And so then you really have like the police feeling like everyone is guilty and they're always the bad guys. How do you make sure that doesn't happen? How do you get it to where it's a positive supportive force for the whole business, for sales, for the customers, and not like ops versus sales?
I think that's going to be a challenge from time to time, if I'm honest. Because when you said it yourself, you know, where, you know, operations hate sales and things like that because of the mess they're creating when the customer comes through. But at the same time, sales then hate QA because they're the ones that are blocking them legally from getting the sales or getting the commission on the sale because maybe they've not been compliant. And it's that vicious cycle. It just goes round and round and round. And I think, you know, there are so many do's and don'ts. There's so many right ways and kind of wrong ways to do things. You do have to create that harmonious approach. I love that word, especially in sales, compliance, and service.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to be singing from the same page. But look, I've seen it done wrong and I've seen it done right. I've worked with teams where there's been that disconnect and I've worked with teams where there's been that unity. The difference for me, and a lot of companies don't always like to do it, is have the regular meetings and updates where everybody gets their say-so. And I'm not saying, you know, you got your boots on the ground, you got your service teams, you got a member of the sales team, you got a member of the QA in there. You have to calibrate. I mean, don't get me wrong. And when you are calibrating, that's where it needs to happen. It needs to happen at that level on the ground because people need to understand what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong, especially when it comes to feedback. But what I'm talking about is kind of a few levels above that where, you know, your stakeholders have to be involved. One company that I worked for a long time ago, you know, were very supportive in a sense of making sure that all of your heads off had regular stakeholder meetings with everybody that was involved or that worked with you, or technically you worked for. You know, as working in a QA department, working in a training department, you know, you are helping the teams. You are technically working for sales. You are working for service. And although you may have a title that is, you know, director of QA, director of learning and development, or whatever that might be, you are reporting into your call center managers. You are reporting into your assistant call center managers. Because at that level, you need to tell them what is going right and what is going wrong. But at the same time, you need to get rebuttals and feedback from the floor as what's working and what's not working. All right. Prime example is you can sit there in QA and you can build a form of what you think is compliant, of what you think works. But if you don't get collaboration from your sales team and your service team and everybody in between, you're either going to see fails or you're going to see passes. But is there a collaboration there? Do you work together like that? No. And one of the best companies back in London that I worked for did that, where you had your call center managers, you had your sales center managers, your service center managers sitting in a room together with your head QA, your manager of QA, and maybe a couple of the senior staff, depending on the size of the operation. And you would sit down and you would go back and forth and build either two separate forms that worked in unison and spoke to each other, or you would kind of have a separate divide. The reason why I think it works well when it's in unison is because you start to spot things that come through. So when they spot an error, it's passed back, it's fed back, and it's done through a errors team and a QA team, and the QA team are involved. But then again, depending on the business, how involved do you have your QA team? Do you have them that involved that it becomes they're the ones doing the feedback, or are they the ones passing the feedback to the, you know, the supervisory level to do the feedback that way? Everybody has different ways of doing it. And I think that's one thing that every call center can agree on, that I don't think there's one size fits all.
Yeah. And I think the challenge too is that if you take QA and they just give that feedback to somebody else, is the feedback being actioned, right? And how do you regulate that? How do you ensure that something is happening? It's not just going into a black hole. Because again, most people don't really want feedback. Yes, there are people who want to be successful and they might want feedback. They might want to look at game footage of themselves, right? They might want to play at a better level. But as humans, we really don't like feedback. We don't like anything that could affect our ego and hurt us. So if you're QA and you're throwing the reports over the fence back to sales, are they going to action it? Are they going to put it in place? Are they going to give that? And I think that's something you always, if you're going to do that, you have to make sure that you're measuring it and managing that and holding everybody accountable and ensuring that it's getting done. And then I think, you know, what you said too is like, breaking down those silos. I think that goes for sales and anybody else, and silos in companies in general, where, you know, a lot of times it's sales versus marketing, marketing versus sales. And the more you can align those at the top and bring everyone together at the top and then closer and closer down to, like you said, the boots on the ground level, then what happens is you have this alignment. Everyone realizes, wait a second, it's one company, it's one customer. Your silos don't mean crap. Like, the department doesn't matter. The client doesn't care about your department. The company and the revenue doesn't care about your department and who's right and who's wrong. Everyone should be rowing in the same direction. And I think that's the key, like you said, is bring those managers together, make sure they all have a voice and that everyone is some kind of consensus, not always pure consensus, but some kind of agreement on where they need to go and where they take it. And then something else that you said was interesting is talking about it being, you know, operations or HR function. One of the most successful instances where I've seen with QA, where it's owned by actually HR and training, right? And training development, and QA sit on the sales floor. So people know QA, QA knows everybody, but they're still managed not by sales. Because if it's managed by sales, then, you know, usually it doesn't work out too well. So it can't be managed by sales. But what happens is in that instance, QA sitting there, and then they're familiar with everybody, and then they're giving feedback. And depending on how they do their sessions, they're doing the feedback with people separate, but on the floor. And so it's not like this outside entity that's coming in to give feedback. It's almost part of the team, like similar, but different. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does. Completely makes sense. Look, big fan of sitting on the floor, training sitting on the floor. These, you know, these operational support functions, they should be in with the people. There's no sitting in offices, tucking them away or anything like that. I worked with a company many years ago that actually had, it was a very high, fast turnaround sales center, phoning outbound warm leads. So it was quick sales, it was quick churn, it was in and out. Okay. And what the great thing was they did was they had banks of agents that had a team leader and a QA rep on every bank. And that QA was either ducking into live calls for that team specifically and dishing out on the spot feedback, bang, 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 bang. And then that would be for a couple of hours during the day. And then they'd go back and listen to some calls. And what it did is it kept the agents on their toes. And the really great thing about this is we all know in call centers, when you have somebody sidejacking, listening, remote listening or whatever, everybody's got a different name for it. But to a live call and sat next to that existing agent on the phone, we know that that agent becomes the best agent in the playbook. Oh, 100%. Exactly. They stand to attention. They are compliant. They hit every bullet point in the book. You know, they deliver. But when you've got somebody like that, you have a top performing sales rep all the time. Because they don't know when they're being listened to. They don't know when they're being pulled up on. And they know that you've got a QA rep for that group of 6, 10, 12 people, whatever size the bank was, which was fantastic. But then on the flip side, I've worked with companies that have hidden their 15, 25 QA reps away from the sales floor, the far end of the call center, tucked away. They have security access. No one's allowed to go in there. No one's allowed to speak to them. And they're not allowed on the call center floor. Now that was a big one for me. Now the thing behind it was they didn't want the QA representatives mingling with the sales teams in work hours to give them loopholes to get round things. And there was this whole conspiracy theory around it. And everything was locked down. Because they didn't want, you know, because QA had access to screen recordings and things like that, and they didn't want them sharing information. Now, in some companies that have high security and high data protection, I get that.
Sure.
But if you set the bat with your QA team and you manage it effectively and efficiently, you shouldn't ever have to worry about that because your QA team are there to deliver and make sure that they're actually checking somebody's performance. And the fact is, then it's the QA's manager to dip check into their QA's results and make sure that the QA isn't, you know, allowing their friend to pass QA. And that was the premise. They didn't want, you know, me marking you, but me being friends with you so I could just turn around and go, okay, I've got Jason's call today. Yeah, 100% bonus for you. You know, they should be dip checking those calls.
Yeah.
You know, what goes to show is in that environment, I think the company was very aware the management team weren't dip checking, weren't checking on the team, weren't going in and making sure they were being compliant. Because it's all well and good your sales team and your customer service team being compliant, but are your QA team being compliant? You know, it's give and take. It's back and forth.
Well, and then that gets tough, right? Because then you need QA for the QA. Right, to make sure that they're being compliant, and then you need QA for the QA for the QA, and you know, at what point do you have a culture that you trust? And it's interesting that you talk about that, those two different scenarios, and the one that's like sequestered so they don't give preferential treatment and don't become friends. To me, that is really a sign of a culture, company culture. From above, like who's running the different departments, who's running the company. And if the person running the whole company feels like sales cannot be trusted, and then also who's running operations, if operations is feeling like they really can't trust sales. So they want sales to influence their people, right? Is it a culture of cohesion and everyone is rowing the same direction? Or is it this divided thing? Because I could see both scenarios, and especially with some of the like leaders that I've seen where they feel like either everyone is out to get them or everyone is, generally good and wants to do the best, right? And so that filters down and you just see that. And so I think, you know, for me, you're talking about the sidejacking, you're talking about like listening in and being present, especially if you're sitting physically right there. It's funny, it takes me back. Don't tell anybody this story because I don't want anyone to know. But early in my management career, when I didn't really know what I was doing, and I was learning, and I wasn't good at building strong teams who just knew why they wanted to be successful at that time versus now. One of the things I found is that if I was ever in my office or I was ever out at a meeting at our corporate office or an appointment, we would have zero sales. They would just literally be doing nothing. And this is all inbound leads. So we're paying for leads, but they're just closing zero sales. So what I found is if I was standing out on the floor and I was listening into their calls with my wireless headphones and like jacked into somebody, then they were trying really hard. So what I started doing, and I'm not super proud of the team that I had at the time, but I had to do this at points, is I literally put on my headphones, not listening to anybody, but they thought if I had the headphones on, I was listening to them. And I would literally stand there with my yellow pad, usually making like a shopping list or making some notes about something I needed to do. But I would stand in the bank of the cubicles, and there was like 20 of them. And they figured I was listening to them. And I got so good at it that without even listening to them and their actual call, I knew their half, I could hear them. And I would just tell them what to say over their shoulder and then give them feedback. And so they figured I was listening to them. And we always like doubled production if I just stood on the floor, not even listening, just being present. And again, that's a sign that things aren't well if they have to be micromanaged. And I think that a lot of companies use that tactic in their management on the floor in call centers and then got a rude awakening in the wake of the pandemic and people working remote where they realized, wait a second, like, what do we do now when we can't stand over their shoulders? But I think the big lesson that you talked about, which I think is super valuable, is having QA be a part of it and being involved and being seen as that ally. But here's the question I have for you, though, is the QA person giving just compliance related feedback? Are they giving sales tactics? And does a good QA person, were they in sales before or were they in customer service before? Like, what do you think is a good makeup of that QA person and what they're delivering?
Hey, it's Oliver Catt of Cutter and Catt, and we'll be right back to the podcast. But first, are you ready to help build up the confidence of your call center team so that they can scale and generate more revenue? In our experience, there are many factors that could be keeping your sales operation from achieving the success that you want. The first step to creating call center confidence is to determine the gaps between where you are now and where you would like to be. If you're ready to find out how we can help your sales operation, whether it's anything from training to systems, technology, outsourcing, or anything else in between, email info@callcenterconfidence and we'll set up a free assessment call to find out how we may be able to help. Now back to Jason and I chatting about call centers.
First of all, loved your points. Second of all, I'm so glad you were full screen on that because some of the points you were raising, I was cringing up because I've lived through it. I'm so glad I wasn't on screen. But jumping back to your question about who makes the right kind of QA person, who kind of does the role spot on. Look, we can sit back and go, do you know what? We need to find a top performer or whatever. You don't need to find a top performer if you're marking compliance or if you're marking CX or something like that. Well, you don't even need one when you're doing sales, but you need somebody who knows what they're doing. But again, it depends on what level as a business you want your agent to do. Now, I've worked in contact centers and most recently a client of mine, had a QA team in place that were marking sales. They had a team that marked every company, but I want to go from the sales perspective on this question. And I asked a question about, you know, how involved were they? What did they do? And, you know, to what level did they provide feedback? And the point was that they were marking the forms. They were going through the form that was set out for them, which was a, you know, conversational. Did they close? Did they ask this? There was checklist. There was compliance. There was everything. And the way that it worked was the QA representative would then compile the form, provide the feedback, and then they would also provide, you know, opportunities and areas of improvement. Now, opportunities for me is, you know, what didn't the agent do that you would suggest that they do better, i.e. closing, objection handling, say this when that happened, you know, provide this kind of information, do more questioning in fact finding or your needs identification discovery section. And from sales perspective, we know exactly what we're talking about here, Jason, because those are the key points that, you know, somebody needs to really deliver in order to close a sale. But they had agents that either weren't the best performers or didn't really know how to sell. And is that a sigh I can hear in the background? but they put these people in place because, you know what? And as a company, I love this value. And more than anything in the world, if somebody can't do something or they're not great at it, if you can find another position that they can fill, great, because do you know what? You've kept somebody within the business, you've kept somebody within the industry, and you have, you know, you've really honed a skill and you can make somebody better. But if you're going to put somebody into a role like QA that can't sell, that doesn't know how to sell, and is providing feedback, train your QA team. Get a sales trainer in there or get your sales team in there and have them listening to a million top sales calls to understand exactly what makes a salesperson do what they need to do. Now, I can't remember what the saying is, and I'm sure, you know, those that can't do teach or whatever it is. In that instance, you need to have somebody with experience. It's like me going in to train a bunch of sales reps, but only ever train customer experience. So there's a gap that there's knowledge. Somebody needs to support me or train the trainer. And I have to join a, you know, a sales training profession or something like that in order to understand what I'm doing. I mean, what's your thoughts on that? Is that something you've experienced?
Yeah, I have seen QA come from sales, and people who were in sales and didn't cut it went to operations. They're in operations, maybe customer service, and then they're pulled over into QA. Maybe customer service wasn't their thing either, right? And so they're going many steps away from sales. But yeah, I think that's one of the challenges is where do you draw that line? As an organization, ask yourself as you're tuning into this is what role are you going to have QA do? And what role is your manager's going to do as far as like the compliance side? And the things that you want QA to do, which might be tone, it might be opening, it might be closing, you know, whether it's internal compliance, right? Like they have to cover these things, could be external legal compliance. Like you have to disclose this, you better say this, you can't say this, you know, certain terms you might not be able to say depending on your industry, things that you must say, again, best practices. And then there's the sales side, then there's the feedback, then there's the, hey, I heard the customer ask you this question, and your response wasn't that great, or it didn't actually answer their question, or, you know, it was way too long and you should have done a shorter response. And so as an organization, ask yourself where is the line? What are they going to be providing? All of that feedback or just the compliance piece? What is your sales manager going to be doing? Because generally your sales managers are going to know the sales side better. Now, again, where that gets challenging is now you have two people doing the feedback, two different categories. QA now just feels like the police. Sales manager saying, hey, don't worry about that. Just close deals. Like, here's how to close more deals. And you get that battle. And then also, where does technology, right? Like, we haven't talked about technology and where this fits in. But the technology that's out there from a QA, from a compliance, and then also from a live like guidance standpoint, as far as both compliance and sales effectiveness, like the technology that's out there that both of us are recommending to companies right now. And if people are interested, please reach out to us. We're not yet sponsored by them, so we're not going to mention them here, but you know who you are. And anytime you want to, just give us a call.
Hey, I'm just going to jump in. Specifically, one company that I know both you and I have been speaking to.
Yes, that's the one.
Doing real-time QA. Their system is incredible.
Yes. And not just not like when I hear QA, I'm thinking like quality compliance, like checking the boxes. As also as far as like sales strategy, selling effectiveness, it's pretty ridiculous. I've been demoing it for some clients and it's amazing. I cannot imagine what life would have been like 10, 15 years ago as a manager with this kind of technology in hand.
I have a sandbox version of the tool that I've linked into Zoom calls, and it's incredible. This thing is just off the chart. And I know, I hope we're talking about the same platform.
We are.
But as a sales tool, as QA, I mean, look, reach out, guys. Let us know. We'll tell you offline. Reach out. Let us know, because it's a game changer. Especially with the stats that we've been told they can improve sales and customer. I mean, I've seen one that says they can reduce, 90 seconds off of every CX call.
I believe it. And the point of this is now, especially this is how I look at most things. It's 2021. It's August as of us going live and recording this. And so now more than ever, there's so many tools available for any of this such that it doesn't have to be done manually. I know a lot of the concern with QA, a lot of where the he said, she said comes in, which is like sales, versus the QA, the kind of stuff we talked about in the beginning, a lot of that rub that can happen where it's like, well, I said this, but you didn't understand my tone. And it's like, I did. And then that like technology can take out a lot of that manual work and a lot of that kind of back and forth so that the actual value can be portrayed, right? And conveyed. That's like the key for me, is not just technology taking away everyone's jobs in, let's say, QA, but technology making it so that QA can do what they do best, which is here's the feedback based on what you've said, here's what you should do. Here's what training can give you. Here's what your manager can work with you on instead of the time spent like getting there. So that's where the if you want to be successful in QA, then you've got to scale what was generally unscalable before, which means technology. And like you said in the very beginning, processes, systems, a playbook that says this, here's what we're looking at. Here's who's going to do what with what so that we can be successful.
And that's the thing. These tools, are, as you said, I want to reiterate, are not there to replace people. It's an additional tool that will improve the performance overall of the business. And I think that's the key important message here. Nobody has to lose their jobs. It's like when RPA came out, many years ago, it was very expensive. Now it's very inexpensive to put a robotic tool in place. But RPA isn't there to replace anybody, is there? And for those who are wondering, it's robotic process automation. All of your bots that do all your reports and all of your tools and everything else. It's one of those things where now you have somebody come in and run your bots to do that, because now they've got time to go and do the things that they weren't able to do in the first instance. Instead of marking, on average, and again, this is a stat that I worked out at the last company I worked for, and I checked it with a couple of other companies that I knew of at the time. And some of these people are marking like 0.01% of their entire inbound call volume. That's nothing. I mean, well, don't get me wrong. In the grand scheme of things, it's a lot of calls, especially if you've got 500 people on the phone. But 0.01% is a huge amount of calls in comparison, because if you've got 500 people throughout that working, 5 days a week, taking between 10 and 40 calls a day, that's a lot of calls. Now, don't get me wrong. The problem you've got with that small percentage is, are you listening to every call you need to listen to? Because when you're spot checking or dip checking, and again, a client that I worked with recently had a very specific criteria of the calls that they listened to. So they had to be between this time and this time. That was the length of the call. They had to be on this channel throughout this time of the day to deliver this. Now, don't get me wrong, so they could hit every hour of the day going through it and they could listen to the variation that came through. But if you're setting yourself a 4-minute call to an 8-minute call, what about all those bad calls that come in that are under 3 minutes, right? Why are calls coming in under 3 minutes? Is it because customers are getting that frustrated that they're hanging the phone up and that's why it's under 3 minutes? So what are your agents doing about it? You should be dip checking these other areas that you don't manage. Don't get me wrong. You have a criteria for a reason because that's what you need to listen to. But then again, I've worked in call centers that don't have or don't believe, and some people may pull your hair out when you hear this, they don't believe in average handling time. So, you know, your agent can spend as much time on the phone as possible. And in a great CX world and a sales world, it's great because you can spend the time needed to sell your product.
Right.
But if you spend 2 hours on the phone to a client to sell that product, your QRP's not going to listen to a 2-hour call.
No.
They're not going to go back and then they're going to go reiterate that. And you're not going to pick out all the good things and the bad things about that call. For example, in my opinion, I probably would go and listen to a 2-hour call to turn around and go, well, in a minute, that 2-hour call could have been 45 minutes if you'd have done this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
And that's where you pull it out. But the big thing I think QA teams need to pull out, and this is where QA and training need to work very closely, is trends. Now, you know, you've had experience in this, trends and topics, especially for training, because, you know, working in your sales feature, you know, you used to get your QA team, mark your calls, mark your sales calls. They'd obviously, in every call center I've worked in, send out a list of trends that were highlighting that were either good trends or bad trends that the agents were doing.
Yep.
But my question to you is, should you fix every trend? Should your training team pick up every little thing to make it a fixable thing, or should you let some things go? What do you think about that?
So I think that comes down into just what's going to move the needle the most, right? Like when left up to everyone's devices, kind of like where you're going with your question to me, is certain people or certain departments will want to train everything or fix everything. And while that might be one option, but is it the highest and best use, right? Like I know for me, if I'm not careful, I will try to fix everything, even the small percentage, because I think anything, you know, could keep getting improved. And then at what point is it just diminishing returns? I love your idea about the trends, right? It's both the good and the bad, which I want to talk about. When it comes to the, let's say the negative trends or the things that aren't working well that need to be fixed, I think it's really about what is a systemic trend across most of the reps. And what's missing? What is indicating an obvious knowledge and skill gap that training and management need to address? And then what else is in those trends that's really bad, right? Like what's going to move the needle most? Either, you know, people are having trouble handling objections, or they're getting stuck with this one objection, or they're having trouble closing, or they're having really long calls. Whatever that trend is that's like potentially detrimental and costing a lot of money, that one needs to be attacked. Now, one of the things that I see with trends and the best advice I give to organizations is take those trends, look at the biggest ones that if you fix that would get better results for the team. Yeah. And then don't necessarily put that into the new hire training, right? Because the new hire training, if you've done it right, if you've followed along the first, you know, 15 episodes, and especially the, 3 or 4 weeks we spent on training, then your training program is packed already with the right amount of content in the shortest amount of time. So you can put people out in the field, right? And let them take some live fire and then do continuing education, right? Like ongoing education. And so what I have found is a good best practice is to take the trends from QA and then look at what's the most important ones, and then have that be what's done in the continuous education by training. Be like, all right, next week, we need to cover this. We built you a module. It's in the learning management system. We're going to have a meeting about it. Watch this video. We're going to come together. We're going to talk about it. Here's why this is important. And then just that should be the ongoing. And then you should be able to get people away from that trend. And then the other part, which I think is important, and this is where, again, the police analogy is very valid, like especially, you know, in the US, is that depending on your experience with the police, it's really negative, right? The police are there. They just want to cause problems. Let's say you drive fast. I have a friend who likes to drive fast. And so, you know, the police are there just to make him drive slow. And it's not a positive thing, right? A lot of people have this kind of negative association with the police. And if you've ever been in trouble, not like bad trouble, but you've had trouble or something's happened to you and you need to call the police and that you need their help, then all of a sudden it's a different frame of mind, right? Like all of a sudden it's there to help you and it's a positive force, which is what it's supposed to be, right? They're supposed to be there to help, to protect and serve. The serve part is super important. So if you've had positive experience where you've needed them, then it's great. Then you have a different attitude and different focus. I think that's super important with QA, the feedback and the trends, like you mentioned, which is the positive, which is, okay, so here's the trends we're seeing in the deals that are closing, not just by top reps, but by everybody. Here's the trends. Here's what they're doing. Here's the formula for success. Instead of like, here's what everyone's doing wrong. Like, here's what the deals that are going right and the people that are doing it right. And so let's focus on how do we get everyone to do those things? Like, how do we move that forward? And focus on that positive. So I think that's super important. When a QA program is done correctly, it's seen as that positive force. It's the positive feedback. It's the, here's what you did right on the three deals you closed. Do more of this. Like, here was your formula for success on your calls. Do this. And here's the trend we're seeing for everybody. When it's 45 minutes, when you overcome objections like this, when you talk 30% of the time and your prospect talks 70% of your time, when you say this, when you transition this way, your deals close, right? This is what we're seeing. And then train everybody on those positives balanced with whatever, you know, negatives you've got to deal with.
I love that. I absolutely love that, because what you're doing is you're taking the best bits and highlighting. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think some of the companies can take a lot away with that, especially to go out there and pick that piece up. I think the negative side, quite rightly, as you said about the policing or the one-offs, I think those are usually an issue. A company I worked for back in London a long time ago used to do a Friday update every Friday. It would be from QA, or it would be from something specific that came out, or an update that was required in the business. And 9 times out of 10, it was the, you know, the training updates. It was never anything bad. It was a quick in and out, bite-sized session every Friday. I think we ran something like 5 sessions or 6 sessions from 2 till 5 that people could just dip into and kind of learn all the key points they needed to take away. I think you're 100% right, though, Jason. Do not add it into your already jam-packed induction schedule, because at that point, you're already going to be elongating everything that's already there. Long inductions are always painful. Adding new information in there each week because of a one-off here or a one-off there is pointless. The same way with trends on a training on a one-off. I used to get pulled up. Oh, why hasn't this been trained out to the entire business? Why haven't you sent a massive update out to the entire company? Well, because that's happened once. When did it happen before? Well, never. It's a one-time thing. How long have you been operating? 10 years. Okay. Do you reckon it'll come up again? Probably once again in the next 10 years. Would you agree with training out those one-offs like that? Because I know, in my opinion, I think that would be a waste of time. I think you add it together with generic updates, or maybe like a sprint, like an IT sprint, when they release updates, like, you know, every other month or every other week or whatever it might be, is you do like a training release or a training update. And that goes out, it goes into your e-learning platform. People read it, people sign it off, because in my opinion, one-offs like that don't need training. Do you think that's a valid waste of time or valid time, should I say?
It could be a valid waste of time. So here's my one thing for that. Here's where I think as a management team, that my suggestion is, based on experience, is to watch out for the things that it's a one-off, a one-time event that triggers something in QA, right? Somebody says something or takes a new approach that is not compliant or is not good, right? Like, makes the hairs on the back of QA's neck stand up. And if that thing takes off like a wildfire across the team, you're going to have a big problem, maybe even a big legal problem. Like, so I think that's where you have to be careful. And this is really tough. I will say, so difficult to get QA to look for these one-off things, not make a big deal out of them, but raise their hand and point out this one-time event or two times where they see this thing, and then have management take the appropriate action, not overreact or underreact. Because I've seen it where somebody does something once. Oh, it's not on the trend report because it happened once. Then all of a sudden, somebody overhears it in the next cube over, and then it spreads, and then it spreads, and then it's everywhere, right? And then now you have this big problem. So I have also seen it where there's these one-ish off, like maybe only a couple of times, maybe one person in particular. And then I will talk about it in those updates you're talking about, which is, hey, by the way, we're seeing this trend. This is why it's not okay. Here's what to do instead, and kind of quash it like as fast as possible before it gets out of control. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, you know, if it's a one-off, it doesn't happen. I mean, usually you have bigger, you know, fights to fight than some one-off stuff, unless your machine is just so awesome that you have the time to focus on one-off stuff. Most of the time in sales operations, everything is on fire. And so you got to fight the important ones first. And that's usually what I see.
Yeah. And you know what? There are lots of ways to deal with it. You know, whether you've got a team of QA, whether you've got one QA, you know, everybody's kind of priorities is their own priorities. And that goes for QA here as well. And in this instance, in the fact of, you know, if there are a one-man band, they are going to be listening to everybody, judging everybody. Yeah, they'll be putting trends down. They'll be putting reports down. But again, whether you have it done manually, whether you have it done as a team, whether you have it done automatically, you need to make that decision of where you're going and whether you are going to have these people in place, as you say, Jason, as the police, as the regulators. Are they there for that? Do you want a team that will eventually create loopholes to get round your QA? Prime example, let's say you've got five things to say at some point during the call to score 100%, right? You know, all they'll do is they'll put a little sticky note on their desktop. They'll go, right, okay, I need to say calls are recorded. I need to say this. I need to say that. I need to say that, you know, I'm going to do this. And then somebody will go on the phone and go, hi, good afternoon. You're speaking with Oliver. Just to let you know, calls are recorded. This is happening. This is happening. This is happening. Thank you very much. Bang. All of a sudden, you sound like a robot. But according to QA, you've done everything you need to do. And I think that's one of the biggest things that you need to make sure. And a big key takeaway is all your points on a QA form should be a checklist, but in conversational format. Are they coming up? Are they just a checkbox exercise? Because the minute you start to put your police regulating this stuff is the minute people will find a way around it. And that's not what you want in any QA team.
No, and I think it really always comes down to intent, right? So what's the intention of sales? What's the intention of management and leadership? What's the intent of QA? The intent is to close more of the right deals, right? And the right deal generally being a client who's going to stay, they're satisfied with what they bought, they keep it or stay signed up for as long as possible with the right amount of cancels or returns. And that's what the company wants, right? For the long-term success. And so it's really about that marriage between what sales and sales managers want, which is closed deals, what the company needs, which is compliant and successful closed deals at scale of the right buyers. And then realizing, right, it's not just about checking the box. Like, okay, I got to get these scores because that's going to be a terrible sales experience. Like you're saying, like if you did that to me and just checked all those boxes off in the first like 30 seconds, and I don't even know it as a customer, but it just feels bad and weird, I'm not going to be happy, right? Like I'm going to be like, this is a weird start and I already don't trust you because you're in sales and now it seems weird. And like, now I like what's going on. And so I think the key is that intention. The intention is to just be successful and get better. And I think the more sales managers can, as they move up, like we talked about, from sales into leadership, see that in order to be successful, You have to have that balance with the QA and the sales and the effectiveness, what needs to be said in conversation and the why. As long as everyone knows the why the QA and compliance matters and the strategies matter, then it should help everyone go in the same direction.
Hey, I got one big question for you before we have to wrap up today based on that. If your sales team are based on passing QA and they have to hit a number of markers in order to do that, do you believe in, and not everybody knows this term. I know I've worked with it with only a few call centers, but 100% auto fails. If they miss something that is that severe, that done wrong on a call, 99% of the call is done accurately. 99% of the call is done compliant, happy. Customer is over the moon. But you've not said one thing that is classed as an auto fail. Do you believe in that?
I do, depending on the industry and what that is. Like, what is being sold? What that those items are, like those auto fail bad list, like either you say this and this is bad, or you don't say it and then that is bad. I generally have worked in debt related industries, financial services with consumers, and there's so much regulation and compliance around that, that if you miss something and don't set the right expectation, consumers could be confused about what they're getting, which could cause issues internally, externally, all kinds of issues. And it's where, like, you have to. And like, if you've ever called a bank and talked to someone or gotten a new credit card, they have a bunch of stuff they have to go through. And there's a whole bunch of reasons. And what I've always trained reps is when you have those go, no go items that would trigger that auto fail, if they don't say it, literally read it. I would always have a printed script. I'd say, read this. And the customer will understand and appreciate it because they're like, that is compliant. I appreciate it. It's like calling my bank. I think that's important. If you have something like that internally where you're like, if you don't say this internally, we know these customers are just going to cancel, then you should. Like, that should be important. Again, for the sake of the business, sales will fight it and say, oh, that's not fair. I did 99% right. But if that 1% is going to lead to a bad sale, then the other 99% doesn't actually matter.
And you know what? I agree with that. And I think you make some very valid points. And I think, you know, if you're talking about, you know, calling your bank has to do an identification and verification. Am I talking to the right person? Because if you're not, hey, you could end up giving some vital information away. You know, what do they have in the UK now? It's like GDPR and all that kind of stuff. Everything is there. And compliance is a very, very, very big topic. But look.
Yeah. I think I think that's the key, though. It's like, you know, again, sales might want to fight that, but like, what is going to produce a good sale for the customer and for the company and do the right thing for the company and the customer long term, not just sales and their paycheck in that moment or their metric or customer services metric. So I think that's I think that's important depending on what you're selling, for sure.
Awesome. And a great, great comment to end on.
Yeah.
So, well, look, we got more stuff on QA. Go on, after you.
Yes. No, I was going to say, where should people to find us? What are the latest things that you're putting out there? What have we got going on? How can find
I got people find us? On Instagram. I need to keep going on that. So, guys, follow us on Instagram. We're gaining traction, low followers, but that's all happening. Facebook, LinkedIn, it's all there. Social media, Luma.com/CallCenterConference to sign up for our live broadcast email notifications. And of course, you can check us out live on www.callcenterconference.com. Lots of places to go. And then obviously from a podcast perspective, Jason.
Yep. So the podcast is there. Episodes are live. Make sure to subscribe. It's everywhere. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon has podcasts, Google Podcasts. It's also on or coming soon to the Call Center Confidence site. We'll have them on there. But podcasts are available everywhere. And essentially, if you're watching this live, it would just be a matter of weeks before it's on there. If you're catching these replays, then enjoy on the podcast. And also make sure to tune in live, check out the website, give us your feedback, leave a rating, a review. It always helps. Share with anybody in the call center space. I mean, really what we're putting together now, 16 weeks in, if someone takes those and just goes through all of them, it's a really good blueprint and map for call center confidence building. So yeah, super exciting to put all this content out there.
No, 100%. And let you know, guys, remember, this is for you. If you want to let us know what topics you want to hear, if you want to let us know what you want to speak about, message us afterwards, tell us, then we will do that. You know, we'll continue to go through our list of content that we've already got. You can email us at info@callcenterconfidence.com and we will come back to you as quickly as we can. We've got some new media coming out. We've got content coming out. We've got everything to share. It's all happening here at Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Kat. So from me, Oliver Kat, and
Jason Cutter.
See, impromptu, it works. We'll see you next week here, and check out. We'll see you soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Call Center Confidence Show with Cutter and Kat. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. For more info about the show, you can always go to www.callcenterconfidence.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.